Good morning. Queued up for your listening pleasure today, we have the story of the Great Oregon Jailbreak, an outlaw named Harry Tracy. Tracy busted out of the state pen in Salem and made Oregon and Washington a very lively and kind of dangerous place for 2 months before being gunned down in a wheat field in central Washington. It wasn't just because there was an outlaw loose that Oregon and Washington were a lively and dangerous place. It was because of all the drunken, rowdy, crazy people who were out there trying to apprehend him. As for Tracy, Oregon legendary writer Stuart Holbrook famously called him a garden variety idiot. And, well, there may be something in that, but I'll tell you the whole story and you can decide. My name's Finn J.D. John. It's Monday, May 14th, and you're listening to me reading a column from the archives of the weekly newspaper column I write, Offbeat Oregon History. I do this every day. Of course, if you're subscribed to this podcast, you know that. And if you're not, and you'd like to know more about it, well, stay tuned or just check it out on offbeatoregon.com. Today's column ran on July 22nd, 2010, under the headline, Harry Tracy, the Last Wild West Outlaw Gunned Down After Bloody Oregon Jailbreak. Here we go. The golden age of outlaws lasted from just after the Civil War until the turn of the century, when they ran out of places to hide from the law. But did you know the last of these outlaws, an associate of Butch Cassidy, lived and worked in Oregon? Dapper, charming, and deadly, 27-year-old Harry Tracy was Oregon's only connection to the world of professional Western outlaws such as Jesse James and the Dalton brothers. By the standards of his peers, he wasn't a particularly successful robber, but he was remarkably adept at breaking out of jail, and it's for this, in particular for a bloody breakout from the Oregon State Pen in 1902, followed by an even bloodier 2-month manhunt, that he's chiefly remembered today. Tracy was on the run after breaking out of prisons in Utah and Colorado when he came to Oregon back in 1898. He soon met up with a local rowdy by the name of David Merrill. He and Merrill became friends, and Tracy became more than friends with Merrill's sister Rose. The two were married shortly after they met. Everything was great until the money ran out, and Tracy and Merrill had to go out and get more. This they did with a particular style and panache that quickly got them into the headlines as the McIntosh Bandits and the False Face Bandits. But although Tracy was a stranger to them, police already knew Merrill pretty well. He was on their list of usual suspects, so of course they sent a detective out to check him out. And of course the police found him hiding upstairs, no doubt surrounded with stolen goods, and under questioning he told them about Tracy. Well, when Tracy came back, he kind of figured that something was up. So after trading pistol shots with a detective, he jumped a train to flee. Now, by an odd stroke of luck, though, the conductor, after figuring out that something bad was happening on his train, disabled the thing right next to a butcher shop that Tracy and Merrill had robbed earlier. The butcher's son was ready there with a shotgun full of birdshot, which he let Tracy have at relatively close range. Painful end first, of course. The badly wounded robber ran a short distance, but finally gave up, and was sent off to serve a 20-year sentence in the Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem. Once in the pen, Tracy got busy doing what he did best, planning an escape. Having somehow arranged for some money to be sneaked in for him, he bribed someone, no one knows who, to hide a pair of Winchester carbines in a pattern box in the prison foundry. He bribed a soon-to-be-released inmate named Harry Wright to get a rope ladder and toss it over the prison wall. On the morning of June 9th, 1902, everything was ready. Tracy and Merrill opened the box, got out their rifles, gunned down two guards immediately, and started the breakout. By the time they got out of the prison yard, they'd killed four guards and wounded a fellow inmate. A fifth guard, shot and dying, was used as a human shield until they got outside, at which point Tracy put the final bullet through his head in cold blood, and the two men ran for it. Thus was begun a 2-month manhunt covering most of northwest Oregon and much of western Washington, as Tracy and Merrill tried to get back to Hole in the Wall, Idaho, headquarters of the Wild Bunch gang, not knowing Cassidy and company had fled to Argentina the previous year. They were headed for Washington, stopping when they had to get a meal or even a bed at farmhouses along the way, and they were pretty successful at getting what they needed. After all, who would deny hospitality to two armed, desperate men? Bloodhounds were called up from Walla Walla. Tracy sneaked around and mixed his scent with that of the pursuing posses, confusing the dogs. Then the governor announced an $8,000 reward for the two men's capture, alive or dead. This inspired dozens of ad hoc citizen posses to pour out of saloons from Salem to Seattle, most of them thoroughly braced with spirits. The result was a chaotic landscape of heavily armed drunks looking hopefully over every backyard fence for Tracy and Merrill. Quote, The whole damn country was full of militia, and many of the boys were potted, Detective Joe Day of the Portland Police Department told Stuart Holbrook many years later. They shot at everything, and Clark and Cowlitz County sounded like the Spanish-American War all over again. It was the most dangerous place I was ever in. These boozy posses may have made the countryside dangerous for everyone, but they were no match for a professional killer like Tracy. On the few occasions when they found their quarry, they quickly found themselves wishing they had not. After crossing the Columbia, Tracy shot his brother-in-law dead. Some sources say he read in a newspaper that Merrill had cut a deal to deliver Tracy in exchange for a reduced sentence. Now on his own, he continued making for Hole in the Wall. He made it as far as Creston, beyond the Snoqualmie Pass, before he was pinned down by police in a wheat field. After taking a bullet that cut a leg artery and another one that broke his other leg, the dying bandit put himself out of his misery, and ours, with a Colt 45. Tracy had been on the lam for 58 days, and had killed 11 people along the way. During that time, he'd furnished eager newspaper readers with a gripping story, and by the end, he was the most famous person in the country. When he was finally dead, souvenir hunters stripped his corpse bare of clothes and hair, and authorities felt it was necessary to actually melt his face off with vitriol, an old-fashioned term for sulfuric acid, so that his corpse could not be dug up and put on display by some enterprising body snatcher later on. Tracy was the last of a dying breed, the breed of the hard-living, deadly American outlaw. A few years later, the rest of the hole-in-the-wall gang, having been tracked down and identified by Pinkerton detectives, would be wiped out by a detachment of Bolivian soldiers. America was changing, and with it Oregon, and there was no room for men like Harry Tracy in the new America. Not even in the wild, rough frontier state of Oregon. There's an afterword to this story. After the article was published in the Creswell Chronicle, among other newspapers, a gentleman from Wisconsin named Jim Gardner got in touch with me. Jim, as it turned out, is related to Harry Tracy, whose real name was Severn. Tracy Severn. Tracy's family was not proud of him. And when he died, the Severns did not exactly rush to publicize the connection. In an age that had great faith in the power of genetics, having a vicious killer in the family made the neighbors wonder about the rest of one's clan. Enough time has gone by, though, for Jim to be comfortable telling the full story, which he did in the Journal of the Outlaw Lawman History Association in three articles in the early 1990s. Tracy grew up in Pittsville, Wisconsin, a child of a highly respected and successful family, and as a youngster gave no sign of any predilection to a life of crime and murder. One critical item to keep in mind if you are going to do any further research on the Harry Tracy story is the remarkably low quality of some of the historical sources on this event. There is something about an outlaw story that seems to bring out the liar in writers. It's almost as effective as gold and buried treasure. Of particular note, Jim tells us, is an article by Ray Hastings in True West magazine, published in 1972, which claims, among other things, that the young Tracy raped and killed his Sunday school teacher. As I learned when doing research for this story, it's hardly the only historical account of Tracy's life whose author enhanced it a bit. You will need to crank up the sensitivity level of your BS detector to the max for this one. That's it for today. You've been listening to an Offbeat Oregon History Archive column. If you'd like more, you can read hundreds of columns from the last 4 years at offbeatoregon.com. On that website, you can also subscribe to get these podcasts delivered straight to your smartphone every day via RSS or iTunes, or join the conversation on the Facebook page or Twitter feed from links on the page. This column is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Details at offbeatoregon.com/cc. And if you're ever in Corvallis and have time for a cup of something, look me up. I love geeking out with fellow history buffs, especially when there's coffee and or Irish stout involved. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. Oh, one other thing. My book, Wicked Portland, the Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, is coming out June 5th. If you enjoy this podcast, chances are pretty good that you'll like it. I'd like to invite you to take a look. The website's up at wickedportland.com. That's wicked-portland.com. And if you get really excited, you can pre-order the thing for something like $14 on Amazon. The cover price, I guess, is $20, $19.95, something like that. Anyway, that's all I got for today, so have a great day.